2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Inside Sources.
Welcome back to Inside Sources here on KSL News Radio. Great to be with you. I am Boyd Matheson, opinion editor at the Deseret News. And, of course, we've been talking about really important conversations that need to be had. Really, our two words for the day we're going to continue to compare and contrast is incite and insight. Easy to incite anger. It's easy to incite frustration and fear. It is a whole other thing altogether to get to the insight. But insight requires you to listen, to be humble, to be teachable, to be engaged. And we got to have a different kind of conversation around that. I am just thrilled to have joining us on the program today my good friend Teresa Deer from Chicago. She is the founder of Human Capital Strategy Group, where she does all kinds of different human resource training. She's also a social entrepreneur, activist. We first met in an interesting place, Teresa. We actually met in Detroit, Michigan at the NAACP National Convention. And that started a great friendship, unexpected, and what a blessing to my life and to my family. Teresa, thanks for joining us today.
It is my pleasure. And, of course, it has been just God's intervention that he would bring us together as colleagues and friends for such a time as this, boy.
Yeah, it is. And it is a really important time. And it's one of the things that I immediately noticed and connected with you on was this fact that you had this ability to take on the tough issues in a way that was just so insightful, so inspiring, so inviting that it just made us just fast friends, brothers and sisters, literally, I think, is the
right.
way we rolled out.
Yes. Of course, of course. Again, you know, I think that, you know, what resonates with both of us is a sincere and authentic care for humanity first. And then we do that through the prism of Jesus Christ's love for all of us. And I think that's what we should always keep at the core of who we are and what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. You wrote a brilliant piece for us here at Deseret News. In the wake of a lot of the unrest and the challenges going on around the nation as it relates to race and racism, that it is time for a different kind of conversation and a different kind of action. And from your experience and from where you reside, give us a little sense in terms of where do you think we are, and then we'll get into a little bit of where do we go from here.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for the question. So my next article that I'm actually working on now is really a letter to everybody that's witnessing the civil disobedience and unrest around the country. And one of the things I want your listeners to appreciate is that most of the people are peaceful protesters. There are saboteurs and infiltrators, and there are people that are paid to come in and disrupt these protests. I know that because I participated in lots of peaceful protests and marches throughout the country, and I've seen these saboteurs and infiltrators come into our marches. But having said that, you know, we're at this place now because we as African Americans and those who understand our experience, we have been marching and protesting and, you know, demanding and requesting and crying out for decades for justice. So if you look at some of these situations like Trayvon Martin, you look at Eric Garner from New York, I Can't Breathe. I mean, you know, I could spend the remainder of this time, Boyd, enumerating and listing the names of children and adults who have died in the hands and at the hands of police. And so, you know, we have fought justice and nothing has happened. Here in Illinois, we had Michael Brown, who was shot 16 times. And this young, 17 years old, unarmed, shot 16 times by police officers. And there were many police, I think it was about 10 or 12 other officers that just watched this, witnessed it, and no one stopped. So my point is that after all of this, and we have not seen justice, or we'll see an officer like in Chicago that shot this young man 17 times,
right,
he gets 3 years. And we say to ourselves, "Is how is that justice? How is it justice when you have this young white man who goes into a church in South Carolina and shoots 9 people, and then he is given a protection around his chest? He is taken to Burger King. He is handcuffed, placed gently into the back of a police car. That never happens to us. So we say, where is the justice? Where's the balance? How are the scales balanced as it relates to justice? So what you see out in the country now is that we are kind of expressing a parenthetical message that enough is enough.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to recognize. I'm glad you point out that those that infiltrate a lot of the peaceful protests, the important demonstrations that aren't there to incite violence and all of those things, but are there to create a moment where we can get to the insight of, wait a minute, something is wrong. So and it's so fascinating to me that everybody, I think we have so many areas of agreement. I was just looking at a poll from Scott Rasmussen, and everyone agrees that the perpetrators need to be brought to justice. Everyone agrees we've got to have significant criminal justice reform. Everybody agrees. We have all these areas of agreement, and yet we're still here. And I think that's where we have to ask.
Go ahead. And that's the thing. We agreed 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We agreed, you know, when Trayvon Martin was killed. We agreed when Eric Gardner said he couldn't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So, we are philosophically aligned, but who is willing to go to council meetings with us, to talk and write to our congresspeople and senators and really begin to influence and affect change? You know, it's one thing to take a poll and talk about how you feel about an issue or a situation, but until you roll up your sleeves and walk with me and work with me in the trenches to affect change, it's almost like, hollow and empty words.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we talked about that in our editorial that, editorials are about words, usually 500 to 700 of them, as you well know.
Right.
And sometimes words just fail. And when words fail, action is the solution. I wanted to get you to react to something because you told this. We interviewed you about 6 months ago, I think it was. And talked about, what should we do immediately? I had Joseph Grinney on yesterday, Crucial Conversations, and he said in South Africa, they do a national poll every 6 months, and the last question of the poll to the entire nation is, in the last 6 months, have you invited someone from another race to lunch or dinner at your home? And you told me that in Detroit. You said, my advice is, have a friend of a different race, of a different background, of a different thinking. We got about a minute to go, Teresa. Just give us your perspective. What's something that we can do today? And we're going to continue this conference, this conversation when we get your next article in. But what should we do today? Where should we go today?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me give you a few quick things. You should befriend someone who is not like you. So be it African-American, Hispanic, Muslim, etc. Befriend that individual and then just take the time to listen and ask questions. The other thing that I would encourage you to do is to be an advocate in this cause. What does that look like? That looks like sending an email to your congressman or your senator. It is sending letters to Donald Trump himself. And it is also making sure that when you see offenses of any kind, those offenses that are overt, those offenses that are covert or even nuanced, respond immediately. Be someone who steps in and not someone who will turn a blind eye and a deaf ear to what you know is wrong and offensive.
Fantastic. Teresa, dear, always appreciate your insight, my friend. We will have you back real soon. Appreciate your leadership.
Look forward to it.
On this important issue.
Thank you, boy.
All right. All the best. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to continue to break it down here on KSL News Radio. Doug Wilkes, editor of the Deseret News, will join us on KSL News Radio.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.